And he was now approaching the path down from the Mount of Olives, and the whole multitude of the disciples began to praise God joyfully with a loud voice for all the deeds of power they had seen, saying, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory to God in the highest." Some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, order your disciples to stop." And Jesus answered, "I tell you, if these were silence, the stones themselves would shout out." But as Jesus came near and saw the city, he wept over it, saying, "If you, even you, had only recognized on this day the things that truly make for peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes." Join you all up there.
So, sit up there with you.
Peace Jam program. I didn't really know much about Peace Jam before I came to the United Church of Granville. This is a program that was already started and was thriving before I ever got here. But this is a really fascinating opportunity for our youth to interact on issues of peace and justice amongst themselves during part of the school year, and then, are you okay there, Hannah? Okay. And then to be able to go visit a Nobel Peace Prize laureate whose work and life and matrix of activity they've studied during the spring Peace Jam conference. It's been in Kalamazoo every time. And so which Nobel Prize laureates have you studied? You've been here the longest. Hannah and Anna, have you done both 4 years or just Anna? Okay. Can you remember all four laureates that you studied?
Yeah. Well, the four that I've studied, and they actually went to one conference before me, but the four that I've studied are Betty Williams, who worked with women in a women's movement against religious violence in Northern Ireland. Adolfo Perez Esquivel, who worked against political violence and the kind of military oppression in Argentina. Rigoberta Menchú Tum, who you heard Julie talk about, who kind of fought for the rights of indigenous people in Guatemala. And this past year, Shireen Abadi, who worked for women's and children's rights in Iran.
Good. And just a minute before we get started, I'd like everybody to introduce themselves. Just say your name, and if you want to add anything to that, you can.
All right. Well, I'm Anna Burkett.
Okay. I'm Carmen Walcott.
Now, you guys are going to have to talk right into these mics.
I'm Carmen Walcott.
There you go.
I'm Michael Rainwater.
I'm Adam Davidson.
I'm Hannah Reiser.
And we've had a lot of participation this year in Peace Jam. How many people were taking part in the program this year? I know, Hannah, you weren't able to go to the trip because you were feeling ill at the time. But
was it 11?
11. 11 high schoolers. And so today, since we're talking about Peace Sunday, I thought we would take advantage of some of the work that they've done and ask them what they thought about peace. In today's gospel account, we have this image of people misunderstanding what peace is. At least that's the image that we get from the gospel text here. These folks welcome Jesus into Jerusalem before the feast of Passover in the last week of his life and before his eventual execution on the cross. And they welcome him to the city saying, "Shalom in heaven, glory to God, Son of David, save us," they say in another gospel account. And we presume by reading these passages that the common folk who are excited about Jesus going into the capital at this time were anticipating that Jesus would, in fact, inaugurate some kind of violent overthrow of the government, of the power structure at the very least. And in this Lucan passage, Jesus says something very interesting. He says, "If you had only recognized the things that made for peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes." So kind of reflecting on that, I'm just going to ask the question, what do you think peace looks like? What are the things that make for peace? What do you think? And I'll open this up to anybody. You don't have to go one by one. Just anybody who's interested in speaking to any of these questions can answer them.
Well, I think it looks like nonviolence, like people, like they can be fighting, but not physically, more like talking about it and trying to work it out without like hitting each other or yelling, just trying to come to an agreement without getting a little radical, I guess.
Well, I think on, you can look at peace in different ways, but I think inevitably it comes down to the same thing. You have peace between two people, you have peace within yourself, and you have peace on a global scale. And I think that all of those things are very interconnected. Peace is definitely not just the absence of violence. I think a lot of people agree about that.
Now, wait a minute. I'm going to put on my Stephen Colbert glasses now and say, isn't peace when, you know, we fly over and bomb the smithereens out of people so that we create a lull in the violence and assure their compliance with our wishes?
Well, my answer would be no.
Oh, okay.
Peace, for me, is about knowing who you are. I don't think that there can be peace with any insecurity on kind of a grand scale. Peace is about knowing who you are and being confident in yourself and your culture. And by doing that, being comfortable with other people's and celebrating diversity both between two people, whether it be political views or, the differences in culture across the world. And until we change our mindset to be comfortable with ourselves and to be comfortable with other people, peace will not be achievable, at least real peace.
I would say for me, peace looks like truth. Because I think violence, when nations or people are fighting, it's out of fear / different things culminate or different things coming together to muddle up their true selves / their humanity. So that the peace is the clearest, the truest manifestation of human nature. And the violence has either been taught or learned for survival.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I think I agree also, but I think peace is like not just the absence of violence, like you said, but also the absence of fear. Because if you don't have any fear of violence, that means there truly is peace. So everyone kind of has to want peace for there to be peace.
And I definitely agree with everyone in what they've said so far, but I definitely think it's a lot about tolerance. And you saw with, at least I was here for Rigoberta and for Shireen, and both times you see that they were leaders and that they accepted their culture, but they were also tolerant to their oppressors. Like, they understood their own side, but they also understood their enemy, in a sense, so that they didn't really become their enemy anymore, and they just saw them as people, like Adam said, with fear. So I thought that was really interesting that, like, it all comes down to whether or not you're tolerant of your so-called, you know, enemy, to make them, you know, not so much seen as an enemy anymore, but just as people. And so when you, like, bring that humanity aspect in, I think peace can be achieved.
So we often think about peace as non-retaliation, or peace as sort of backing away from conflict. Do you see that? How do you interact with that kind of understanding of peace?
I definitely agree with that. I think there are just different levels of peace, and like that's definitely one of them where, like with Rigoberta, and we watched one of the documentaries about the people going up into the mountains because they were getting away from the armies that were like oppressing them. So in that sense, they're removing themselves from the conflict. So they don't engage in the conflict. So they don't, you know, fight with them, and they just remove themselves. And even though they're giving up these farmlands that they've had in their families for generations, they can still maintain their morality and their own inner peace. And I don't know, I think definitely removing yourself is one option, and sometimes maybe it's the only option to maintain peace, even if it's one that you don't necessarily want to do.
And I also think you can't have peace without basic security, kind of. Like in the case of the documentaries we watched, they didn't have basic security in there with the dictatorship that we supported. Like they didn't have the basic things that they needed to survive. So without those things, they were forced into conflict. And so I think those are a necessity in order to have peace.
Hmm. I think that that's a really, it depends on the situation. I definitely don't think peace is ever a passive thing. I think it's definitely something you need that when it is present, someone has worked for it. But each laureate that we saw really came from a different place in the peacemaking that they did. And I think the biggest contrast is between Adolfo Perez Esquivel and Shirin Ebadi. Esquivel worked out of forgiveness. He was imprisoned for 11 months and tortured most of that time illegally. And he came out of prison and threw away any resentment that he had towards his oppressors. And because of that, did amazing things. On the other hand, Shirin Ebadi also did amazing things. But when we heard her speak, it was out of anger. She was a judge in the Iranian courts, and when the Ayatollah came to power, her license to be a judge was revoked, and she was given a clerk position in the same court that she had presided over, and she quit because she was angry, and they exiled her, and she said that when she got the Nobel Peace Prize, she basically said, you know, now they can see how great I am. After I've won the Nobel Peace Prize, they're going to be watching in Iran and thinking, man, I can't believe we did that. So she really worked out of a place of anger while Esquivel worked out of, forgiveness. So I think that peace for each individual comes from a different place, at least working for peace on a global scale. And there are always different motives.
I was fascinated by this, the complexity of the conversation that you're having, because like we tend to think that, you know, we can tell somebody to be peaceful. But you're saying there are situations in which, you know, anger is going to arise when we're trying to figure out how to come to a place of peace, and that we may have to let that be there for a while. You know, that may be part of the process of coming to peace. Or that retreat is something that one may have to do for a while, but maybe that's not going to lead to a long-term solution, though that may be something that we have to like to move through. And so this is really an interesting conversation for me to see the complexity that you all have used in your thinking about these issues. I was wondering what you think are some of the more common roadblocks to peace, and we can think about it in various levels. Anna talked about this really well earlier about peace in ourselves and then peace amongst the close associates that we have in day-to-day life, and then peace on the global scale or the community scale. What are some of the roadblocks that you have determined are important to confront?
Well, I think one of the big roadblocks is, like, hatred and how you deal with your hatred. Because, like Anna was saying, Sharon Abadi, she used her hatred to really, like, work past the Iranian government and show them how she can still change the world even if they don't let her be a judge, and even though they exiled her, like, she was using her hatred for good. But other people don't necessarily do that. They use their hatred for bad things, and, like, that's how bullying arises and things like that. So, like, that's always a big block on the road to peace, so.
I would think it would be social, economic, any kind of poverty or lack of something that even if you don't need it, if you feel you need it, you're going to strive for it and get defensive. Or because violence you learn from. I mean, babies don't come up swinging.
There's a takeaway today. Babies don't come up swinging.
You can quote me on that.
Have you ever changed a diaper?
No, I haven't. But it's when you get pushed down that you get defensive, that you feel you have to fight for yourself. And it's very hard to live in this world without getting pushed down at least once, whether it's by an individual or a group or the government. But so you really have to strive, and I think it is interesting that Sharon did seem like she was coming from a place of anger.
That anger was at injustice, though, right? She's
yeah.
confronting injustice, and she's frustrated yeah. by it.
I think there are really two things that I can think of. And one of them is what I said before, is like the lack of security and basic shelter and food. That's one of the, we can't have peace really without those things taken care of for everybody, or a majority of people at least. And another thing I think is how people identify in groups. Because I hear, like, people in power saying that they are going to try and do what's best for their country. And that makes sense because they're the leader of that country, but still it makes me think that we're still not to the level of identifying with humanity rather than identifying with our country. Like, all throughout history, people, before we discovered agriculture or whatever, we identified with our small group of people, and we tried to defend our land, and we had that created conflict with all the other people. And then we started settling down and creating communities, and it just kind of got bigger and bigger, and now we're to the level of identifying with huge groups of people, like nations, as well as our smaller groups that we also, like Granville. And so I think once everyone identifies with humanity as well as their own cultural, because that's also important, is your, like, cultural identity as well. But I think that's a roadblock, is people not thinking like that or not trying to think like that.
That gets back to this issue of needs, too, that Michael is bringing up. You know, when our needs are not met, and all of us have legitimate needs, when those needs are not met, we feel frustrated. That frustration leads to anger, and that anger leads to violence. And so there's this very significant connection between needs and peace, and justice and peace. And so this is something that continues to percolate all through the Gospels. And so I'm going to get back to that word gospel, right? The gospel, the word gospel means good news. And in the book of Ephesians, Paul talks about having our feet shod with the gospel of peace, the good news of shalom. And, you know, that Hebrew word shalom means right relationship, the rest that comes from right relationship in our hearts, right relationship with others, right relationship with the world, with all creation, with our vocation. And so that good news of peace is something that Christians from the very beginning were called to proclaim and to have joy in it. So I'm going to ask you, what has really made you joyful about this journey that you've had as you've built yourself as a peacemaker? You've grown up and matured as a peacemaker. What has brought you joy? What has been a moment of insight or something for you that has provided inspiration of some kind or another? And this can be, you know, something that you've experienced during Peace Jam or not.
Well, last year we got to build like a shed for tools for the Kalamazoo community for their community garden. And the whole time, we're not very good shed builders. So, you know, putting all these plastic pieces together was a bit of a challenge. And, you know, but we worked through it. And it was mostly like our Peace Jam girls that were there. So we didn't really get to work with anyone other different types of Peace Jammers. But we definitely got to work with the community, which was really, really cool to see. Because even people who weren't necessarily like volunteering that day, they came over and they were saying, oh, this is going to be so cool to like have our own shed and be able to work in the community and work in our community gardens. And people like on their stoops were watching us and they were saying, what a good job. And they were like offering us, you know, like Cokes and like the Pepsi, not anything else, but and like chips and things like that, like to help out with just like that was their way to contribute. And they were just, you know, there was just a big group of people that just congregated after a while, and they would like sit down or they would talk with the other people in their community. So it was really cool to see, like, even though our shed probably wasn't the best shed or it wasn't the prettiest shed, it was still a shed, and it represented something much more. And I think it definitely represented all the things that we were trying to do in our Peace Jam group to, like, you know, outreach to the community and try to get them connected, because, you know, you can always do these nice things for community, like give them food and give them shelter and stuff. But if they don't connect as a community and want to take what you want, you know, like all the drive that you have to help them and want to help themselves, like it's not going to work. So it was really cool to see that the community wanted to not only like help them each other, but like help themselves. And it was really cool to see everyone come together.
This year in Kalamazoo, I worked for this our service project. I worked in a community garden, little, I'm not sure if it was on campus or a little bit off campus. Anyway, students could buy or pay to have a plot, you know, there. And there were interns there working to, I mean, the hill had been sand, so the soil was really poor. So they were having to bring in new soil. And so we were helping them make beds. We were carrying wheelbarrow loads of good soil and to just build the beds up. Anyway, they had this place made out in the middle of the garden that we were like, what are you going to do here? And the head guy was like, we're going to make a raised bed here, but we're going to make it really big. It's going to be like up here. And we were just like, why? And he was like, well, like, it'll be, you have to bend over, and like, why not? Let's just make a big raised bed. So we helped him dig post holes, two post holes on either side of it to put the posts in so that the dirt wouldn't fall over when they stacked it up, and it was going to be a big raised bed. And it's just like Gardner is having fun, like, like, dude, we're going to make a big raised bed. So it's just like, have fun with what you do. I mean, I wouldn't think that gardening would be like a place to like joke around and like check out this raised bed, but
Well, one of the things I love about going to Kalamazoo is getting the opportunity to work with people who are really, really different. You know, being in Granville, you get used to, you know, even the people that are different really aren't that different. You know, a lot of us are pretty much the same. And so when you go to Kalamazoo, when we go to the Peace Jam conference, we get to work with people who are, you know, really, really different. They come from a different place, you know, socioeconomically, or they're a different religion, something we don't see much in Granville, or, you know, their school situation is really different. I know in our family groups, which is the group you're in with people from other schools, we spend a lot of time talking about how our school situations are different. And you get to work with those people and you, you know, you get to realize that, well, even though they're really different, they're really not, that those things don't really matter. And, you know, part of the way you figure that out is through these service projects, which are absolutely amazing. I know all of the ones I've done have been really, really great. And probably my favorite one, if I could pick one, would be last year I worked at a homeless shelter that really kind of made a really pretty big impact on me. And that was because, I had never been to a homeless shelter before. And I also had, you know, we met the person who ran it, and I had the chance to see someone who saw a need in their community and did everything they could to fix it. And I mean, the shelter was amazing. They had showers, they had, you know, shampoo and, you know, any like shower things that anyone needed. They had classes on finding jobs, and they had mailboxes where you could put your address, because, you know, when you apply for a job, you need to have an address and a phone number. And I had no idea that homeless shelters could do that much. And it really made me realize that making a difference in the community can be hard, but it's also very much achievable. And this one guy who was running this homeless shelter in Kalamazoo was making a profound difference on every one of the people that came through there. And so that definitely inspired me.
Well, the thing that inspires me every year and like brings me a little bit of joy is like seeing the laureates for the first time, because the past 2 years, Rigoberta and Shireen Abadi, both of them are kind of short women, both of them are really petite, and the second they step up in front of everyone, though, they have the biggest smile on their face because they're so excited to see everyone who is trying to make a difference just like they already did. And they know we're all inspired by them, but they're also really inspired by us because we are doing our best to make a difference like they did, and that always really puts a big smile on my face, and they always walk off stage with a huge smile on their face, and it's just really inspiring.
Cool. Thanks. Let's give these kids a big round of applause for being willing to be with us today. And can I have Julie stand, and Doug, would you stand up, Julie and Doug? And let's give these two a big round of applause for taking our kids this year to Peace Jam. We appreciate all they do. And for all, we have many other Peace Jammers in the church. I'm going to tell you that after the service today, we're going to have refreshments after we close. But Doug has made a really wonderful little 20-minute movie. And it's really interestingly put together, a lot of music, a lot of action, a lot of humor. And if you're willing to stay and listen to that, we're going to show it at 11:30 right here in the sanctuary after we're done today. So thanks, all of you, for being here. God bless you.